Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality, and we are going further afield today again. We are in the second of our special Reboot Republic podcasts in partnership with the Fight Inequality Alliance, which is a global movement campaigning against inequality and to achieve a just, equal and sustainable world. We are sharing what is going on in terms of inequality globally, and also the protests and communities that are fighting back against inequality, and of course the Davos meeting, which has been held from the 23rd to the 30th of January. And we're also highlighting what you can do. Today we're joined by another three inspiring inequality activists from across the world. We have Antonia Musunga, who is a national coordinator for Kenya Fight Inequality Alliance and part of the global movement. She's an unapologetic intersectional feminist who is passionate about the protection of human rights, gender equality, social inclusion, social justice, inclusion, governance, and development. Antonia, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Great, great. We're looking forward to it too. And also Angela Chada, who is a youth Angela Taneja, who leads the Fight Inequality Alliance in India. She's an education activist and one of the founder members of the Right to Education Forum, which is India's biggest education network. She's worked for the Global Campaign for Education, which is the world's largest educational network. Angela, thanks a million for joining us today on Reboot Republic.
It's a pleasure.
Great. And then we have Jaya Chada, who's a youth activist in the UK. She's taking part in the global protest to fight inequality in the UK. She's a student and also works with the Equality Trust, which is a UK organization that tackles entrenched inequalities. She also works with a youth organization called Burst the Bubble UK that encourages discussions about sidelined issues and topics such as interfaith. Jaya, thanks a million for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited.
Great, great. So in terms of, just before we go to you, to put some context on this, the COVID pandemic, which is actually devastating people across the world, and of course, inequality, has meant that people who've been affected by inequality have been pushed further into poverty. And we discussed this in the last podcast we had with activists from South Africa, from Zambia and Mexico, who highlighted how COVID has really amplified the inequalities that existed, that pre-existed, and has also highlighted gaps in health, in education, and general support for those in poverty. But of course, we're seeing the richest elite meeting again in Davos, not in Davos, but online this year. And they are calling for what they call the great reset of capitalism. And they know that the neoliberal model is failing the people and, of course, failing our planet. But we don't need, as the Fight Inequality Alliance puts it, a reset of capitalism. We actually need a new economic model that's based on human rights, dignity, equality for all, and the environmental sustainability of our planet. Now, during the pandemic, we witnessed moments of hope from ordinary people, frontline workers, communities, incredible achievements of science, public health, and community cooperation. And to draw on Arundhati Roy, the pandemic provides a portal to another place. But we can either drag our destruction with us or enter into a new world with the hope and intention to build a sustainable and equal world. And those who believe we can and must achieve that change are organizing across the world as part of the Fight Inequality Alliance this coming week. And the Fight Inequality Alliance is demanding a people's recovery plan, including a people's vaccine that's available to all, universal public services, and I would add housing in there as well, wealth taxes, recognition of care work, climate justice, and a just transition. And as most of our listeners are Irish, it's also important to highlight that here in Ireland, in a country with massive wealth, we also have inequalities. The most extreme is thousands of children and their families who are in homelessness, and the top 20% of households who own 3/4 of all the wealth. And of course, Ireland's, as we feel, embarrassing corporate tax system that helps the richest corporations avoid tax and, of course, fuels global inequality. So I'm going to start today by asking each of the activists to outline what is the reality of inequality in their countries today, and how has the COVID pandemic changed that or altered that? I'm going to start first to go to Jaya Chada, in terms of maybe you could give kind of your sense of and experience and work and what's going on in terms of inequality in the UK, and how COVID has changed or exacerbated that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with the fact that, particularly in the UK, the COVID-19 pandemic has exposed and exacerbated existing inequalities and almost created new ones, whether that be in, you know, the aspects of race or gender or class. And I think particularly when I look at myself as a student, the things I've been keeping up with are to do with education. So I'll just give a few examples. For example, I suppose one of the biggest, most recent scandals has been the free school meals, which you may have heard about.
Yeah.
And to give people a bit of context, this is where usually in a non-pandemic time, those children in poverty or whose parents can't afford food, would be allowed to access these things called free school meals, fairly self-explanatory. However, lately in the pandemic, what we see is the government not giving vouchers to help, but actually employing different companies, for example, Chartwells, to give £30 worth of free food. And it's not £30, it's like a bag of pasta and a banana. It's ridiculous. Yes. What is being given. And I think there are two key problems with this: the sort of undignified aspect of a parent not being able to choose what their own child can eat, but also the fact that what a food package that's meant to last for 2 weeks lasts for about 3 days at best. And I think that simply goes to show how it's everyone that is struggling, but often the government is unable to help or makes the situation worse. And I think if we're looking at children who not only can't eat or who don't have access to, you know, online schooling from a laptop, these are inequalities that are growing right now within our young generation. So it's really, really concerning, but maybe there is hope.
Yeah, and we're going to come on to that in terms of the hope, you know, because we know that all of you, you know, are working both in campaigning, but also on solutions, which are really, really important. But maybe you could just talk a little bit more about, because the UK and Ireland, for example, have been countries that have been worst hit by COVID in terms of the extent at the moment globally. But how is, you know, I know some research has been done and around the UK, for example, of inequalities around housing, for example, being exacerbated or, you know, exacerbating under COVID. What other inequalities have you been experienced of?
Interesting question. I think that in terms of looking at the inequalities I've been focusing on, another thing I've seen which has been very concerning is, thankfully, the government gave us a furlough system, but there are still problems with that. For example, the newly self-employed who don't have access to the furlough scheme because of, you know, the terms of the agreement, you have to be working for so and so years. And the fact that people who are now out of jobs do not have access to things like this, so they can't afford basic amenities and then are again having to rely on outward charities, is once again really appalling. And in a country that is, you know, one of the biggest economies, the fifth biggest economies, children not being able to eat, not having access to furlough schemes and housing, like you said, is just awful. And I think another interesting thing that I read was talking about the inequalities between the genders, which I thought was quite interesting. So it was talking about how in lockdown, you obviously have this situation where the females are suffering the burden of the childcare. And so, you know, I think the number of female professors that had released new texts in lockdown had sort of massively decreased, whereas the male professors shot up. So yeah, I definitely think there are inequalities within everything we look at, and it comes from basic amenities to sort of more ideological things like the difference between men and women.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thanks, Jaya, for that. And we'll come back to you on that hope and solutions. Angela Taneja from India, in terms of your experience there, you know, maybe you could outline to listeners, you know, the, you know, issues of inequality in your country and how kind of COVID has influenced those.
So obviously it's like most other countries in the world, it's not like the country was a paragon of equality and equity to begin with.
Yeah.
So we've had its own issues with wealth inequality, we've had our own historic inequalities. If it's race in several countries, it's caste for in with us. The dirty secret that every country has of being unfair to a particular social group. And obviously the question of gender, which is universal, with the worst case scenario of also being a person with disability who is poor, a Dalit, and a woman. So therefore, it's not things like things were perfect to begin with. What the pandemic and the subsequent lockdown has done is obviously, like, again, like most countries, has had its economic impact. In April, at the peak of the lockdown, 84% of households reported that this had a loss of income. At the peak, we had, by some estimates, something like 170,000 people losing their jobs every hour. So therefore, that's the extent to which there has been an economic toll. At the same time, however, the wealth of India's billionaires just happened to increase by 35% or so during the lockdown. So there's nothing makes it more stark than that. Now, that's not just a matter of figures. It's also its impacts on people's lives. So I obviously work on my roots of my work in inequality comes from the education movement. So if you look at the issues of education, then we're seeing spikes in child labor rates. By some estimate, the number of children out of school are likely to double in the next year. Issues of child trafficking, girls being forced into early marriage or trafficked. I know UK has its own scandal of free school meals, but for us, it's been more of children not receiving anything, let alone something that's inadequate in many instances. And at the same time, obviously, the middle class had not too bad a time with the digital divide. People have managed, people have coped. We have also had the technology companies, again, our leading education technology company is now valued at $11 billion. So therefore, obviously, has made a something of a profit during this time. obviously, it's a pandemic, so health, the disruption of, we're seeing a disruption of the health system for the poor. And at the same time, frequently hiked charges by private, especially by private hospitals. And at the same time, again, pretty much across the world is the phenomena of the elites making their way in the middle of this health crisis, purchasing their way out of it. We've had bookings, mass bookings of ICU beds by the elites. We've had people, now that we're entering into the vaccine stage, people getting vaccinated out of turn, etc. And obviously, there's the question of the dilution of labor laws and probably and fairly inadequate government help to the poor, while at the same time, if the corporates are making a profit, they're obviously not having issues with social protection or anything of that sort. And of course, across the board in this, social inequalities with the poor and marginalized communities, women have had it worse off, and corporates have not done badly. Let's just put it this way.
Yeah, Angela, that's a very stark picture of inequality there in India, and thank you for that. And I'll come back to you on solutions and what you're doing around that campaigning. Antonia Musunga from the Kenya Fight Inequality Alliance. Maybe you could outline for us just your own kind of what's going on in Kenya in terms of the state of inequality and how COVID has influenced or changed that.
So for us here in Kenya, even before COVID happened, the gap between the rich and the poor was quite wide. And what it meant then was exacerbated by COVID-19. And even before COVID-19, already the government was taxing the poor more, taxing regular good foods that we eat every day, medicine, school supplies. And we saw that level of taxation continue, or that system of taxation continue even during what the government termed as COVID-19 taxes. So the multinationals got their tax reliefs. We got a tax reduction from 16% to 14% for VAT, but the goods that are still being taxed under the value-added tax continued to be taxed even during COVID-19. So what it meant with what, like in any other context, COVID-19 meant loss of jobs, curfews, a lot of Kenyans who are living in the front lines of inequality lost jobs, are casual laborers, so they go to work every day and they earn a daily wage. Two, they work at night. They do jobs that require them to work at night, like guarding, running businesses at night in bus stops, in markets, offloading that. So with the kind of lockdown we had, it meant we had a 7 to 4 a.m. curfew, which has been reviewed over time at different lengths, but still an overnight curfew, maybe beginning at 10. What it meant is that those daily wage earners lost their income, right? So a reduction in value-added tax did not necessarily mean they had more money. It only meant that they needed to restructure their family economics further. This lockdown, the COVID-19 period, also came down with children being at home, meaning families were spending a lot more time at home, but also it increased the work burden for women who provide a lot of labor in the household level. It also came, the COVID-19 period also, schools were closed in Kenya for a period of 9 months. The Ministry of Education here stated that they would make arrangements for learners to continue learning under the lockdown, relying on digital spaces. So poor families or poor children from poor and urban rural and poor and rural urban backgrounds who could not access a computer or internet connection like you and I meant they were not participating in the education systems that were laid in place to sort of catch up. So they've gone back to school in January, but it means they've been left behind, and so they need to catch up even more. Let us not forget that these are children already who the schools they've attended before COVID were largely with very poor infrastructure, understaffed, excluded from co-curricular activities like sports and other necessary activities for learning. When I think about also access to other public services like health, by and large, a lot of Kenyans do not access public health. A lot of Kenyans rely on private health facilities to go, for example, when you have malaria, you go to a private clinic, by and large, because the current public hospitals do not have medication, they do not have staff. And during COVID-19, those are the very same public health services or hospitals that were overstretched because of the new cases. A lot of, we had a period of time where Kenyans could not access basic healthcare, let alone COVID-19 treatment. We're not there yet to begin talking about the COVID-19 treatment. We're talking about people who got sick. Maybe they got a cold or had malaria or had tuberculosis during COVID-19. They could not access those services because the health sector was already overstretched. But of course, and with all this came a lot of violence in the household level, domestic violence, sexual and gender-based violence cases, but also police brutality in enforcing the curfew guidelines. And of important interest in this conversation is to note that police were not killing people in the rich neighborhoods or the rich areas of this country. They were targeting poor rural people, urban poor rural, especially young people. So you'd be found outside without not wearing a mask or outside curfew hours by a difference of a minute or two. A young boy called Yasmin Juma was killed at the balcony and a minute after curfew hours by a stray bullet when police were firing at young people who had congregated to disperse a fight. And so when you think about it, it's very clear that how the system in Kenya treats the rich and the poor is quite different. We are struggling with public services, we are struggling with access to these services, but also how the people in power treat the poor is quite different than how they treat the rich folk in on the other side of the class divide. That said, of course, now schools have opened, there's a lot more to make money at the household level. So even more Kenyans are vulnerable to issues of labor exploitation and human trafficking. Because as everyone is trying to recover from the losses of jobs, they are most likely to take and secure jobs. They are most likely to take contracts that do not guarantee them to their security while they work. Of course, as an alliance, we've really, really been working with community members and other organizations to create awareness on safe migration practices. But really, really, when we think about it, people have very little choices. They have to decide whether to feed their children or to take them to schools or to take them to hospital, and really, really just making very little income to do so. So the choices are very limited in terms of the people living in front lines of inequality.
Thank you, Antonia. That was, you know, really, again, harrowing to hear, and it's important to get that out there in terms of what is that level of inequality. Thank you. I really appreciate you outlining that. Jaya, just in terms of then, you know, to move on to what you talked about, you know, initially the hope and solutions, we want to focus on that. I know the Fight Inequality Alliance is really focused on that as well, to put forward that there are solutions to this. Maybe you could outline some of them that you think are important.
Yeah, so from my perspective as someone living in the UK, again, I think for the UK government, the short-term solutions are actually quite easy, whether that be sort of replacing the free school meal boxes or baskets with vouchers again. But actually, I think my key thing would be listening. And the government needs to listen to those parents. They need to listen to the people who don't have access to furlough, the people with no houses. They need to listen to the scientists to ensure that we're all kept safe and we all have the things that we need to survive. Obviously, long-term solutions do need to be put in for the future, whether that be sort of what I alluded to earlier, you know, the gap between men and women. So actually changing ideas within society, or something more basic, like making sure that without a pandemic, everyone still has access to, you know, food, housing, education, all of these different things. So yeah, I think the short-term solutions are very simple in the UK, and they need to be, you know, inquired by the government and solved.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. Angela, in terms of India then, and, you know, globally as well, but whichever you want to talk about, both are local or global, what do you see are the key things that need to be done to start addressing these levels of inequality that you've highlighted?
I guess irrespective of whether one answers this as India or global, some of the solutions are similar.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it boils down to realizing domestically, one would call them constitutional commitments to equality. If one looks at it at a more global level, then it's the broad human rights vision of development and human rights more broadly. And governments need to put their money where their mouth is and fund the things that are needed to make a more equal society possible. What does this mean? On one level, it's lifting the floor, which is, and we've done a quick survey because our national budget is coming out next week, actually, technically. Okay. We did a rapid survey to get a sense of what people's aspirations are from the budget from an equity lens. What people want is common sense solutions. It's 95% people have said that they want more social protections for those in the informal sector. People want a non-exclusionary education and health system. if there is a, such a thing as a digital divide, if the poor and marginalized cannot access online education, let's, for heaven's sake, not try to get everyone online. If private healthcare is expensive, let's strengthen the health system. Be it the NHS needing strengthening in the UK, or be it the public health system in India, fundamentally the ask is the same. In the middle of the crisis, it's time for a better, stronger public health system. 87% people want a free COVID vaccine for everyone. Again, it's essential. But it's not just lifting the floor, it's also dealing with the question of plenty and the greed of the elites. So at 78% of our respondents said that they are in favor of an extra COVID cess on the super rich. Similarly, roughly 78% also said that they want greater tax on the big corporates. And certainly 65% of the responses said, certainly no more tax rebates for the rich in India. So therefore, it's respect equality, make sure that the priority that it receives is also backed in allocations. Do something about the needs of the poor, but also do something about the rich, and therefore tax the rich, if nothing else, to ensure that the necessary revenues are available. 2 years back, the wealth of India's billionaires was more than the national budget. So therefore, there is a clear correlation there. Tax them, they have the money, and probably others need it more.
Thank you so much, Angela. That's very clear and a very clear call. And, you know, it is similar, echoing, you know, what others have around the need for proper public health systems and for taxing the corporations to ensure everybody has the resources they need. Thank you for that. Antonia Musonga, in terms of your own, you know, in Kenya, what, and again, globally, what do you see kind of are the key solutions, or what do you think needs to be done?
For us here as an alliance, and really thinking about what has happened during the period, is one, and we've already seen steps by international financial institutions to give debt relief to countries like Kenya that are in need of such, and really in the last 1 week, we've seen China and the Paris Club doing that. But really now, the next step is to hold government to account in terms of using what money they save from there to fund public services, as Angela has alluded to. Of course, changing the tax system to make sure that the rich pay their fair share of tax, including rich individuals and rich multinationals that have investments in our country. Also holding them to account in terms of their contribution to climate change issues in this country, and ensuring that is factored in how much tax and revenue they pay in the country, which can be used to fund the services we are talking about that Kenyans living on the front lines to inequality achieve. At a national level, rethinking about budget allocation. In last year's budgets, when the president signed the budget, we were still paying more money to, we're still giving more money to debt as opposed to public services. Even though we could have allocated money to health and education, which would have created some sort of infrastructure, even as kids went back to school in January and we continue receiving more COVID-19 cases. Thirdly, holding power structures in the country accountable and prosecuting and really resolving cases of police brutality, sexual and gender-based violence, but also corruption cases. A lot of the money that we received as grants and loans for the COVID-19 response ended up in the pockets of a few who Kenyans are calling COVID-19 billionaires. So we not only have an existing crisis of many millionaires in the country. We got more as a result of corruption scandals, so stealing money from the public. So prosecuting those cases and bringing them to book, but also recovering that money lost and allocating it to the needs that people need. Of course, also at this time is to say that leaders need to listen to what people are saying. The Fight Inequality Alliance in Kenya today is going to have a concert, which is on the 22nd. And the activists and the members of the alliance have concrete proposals on how we can handle inequality in our country. As we say at the alliance level, that we know what is happening in our communities and we have the solutions. Our leaders need to back up those solutions and support us, even as they negotiate contracts and do and get more loans or grants with multinationals and other international institutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Antonia. And you bring it on very well to the whole area of what, you know, activists are doing. And, you know, it's part of why we're doing these podcasts, is both to highlight these global inequalities and also to show that people are taking action, which is really, really important to give hope for change. And you've just outlined there what you're doing in Kenya. Thank you for that. Maybe, Gia, you could outline kind of what Fight Inequality UK is doing around the coming week in terms of actions and things maybe people can get involved in as well.
Yeah, so I recently joined the Fight Inequality Alliance. So I guess my first project is getting involved with, as we've alluded to, the Better Than Davos global protests. So I, with some fellow youth activists, are soon going to take our solutions to Davos themselves and directly tell them what we think needs to be solved, like the people's vaccine, like the global basic income. So all of these things, that's very exciting. In terms of what people can get involved with themselves, here in the UK, as I said, I work with the Equality Trust, and we are doing kind of an inequality event. So what are the existing inequalities? How can we solve them? From a wide range of different speakers, you know, women, those who talk about class and race and variety of different people, and people can get involved with that. They can come on the Zoom. It's absolutely free. They can just sign up on Eventbrite. So yeah.
That's great. Thank you. And what do you feel? Why is it important to bring that message to Davos?
I think Davos has a bit of a reputation as an all boys club who don't seem to get much done. And I think that a lot of that reputation comes from truth. I think that if we are having solutions by the people who don't need them, then if we don't have the solutions, but then they're not going to be sustainable solutions that are actually going to work. And I think that we need people who are empowered, who have suffered, who want to change because they want to change their own lives, to really drive us forward. And I think bringing my solutions and my fellow activist solutions to Davos will give them kind of, I hope, will give them a personal view of what we want, rather than, you know, some rich people sitting around to put it quite crudely. But yeah
Well, best of luck with that. And of course, we know that ultimately, and Ben Phillips highlighted this, I was talking to him recently about the Fight Inequality, his book, How to Fight Inequality, that it is people power that brings the change, and that leaders ultimately only listen when they feel under pressure from people. And most importantly, that is great to bring those who are most affected, to empower them to bring their voice forward. Angela, in terms of kind of activism engagement in India, maybe you could outline some of the things that are happening.
So two parts to the question. Therefore, what is it that we do? Obviously, as you were saying, at the heart of it is the mobilization of citizens to both challenge the question or the inevitability of inequality prevailing, and at the same time also offering some concrete solutions and pushing for tangible policy change. And not just change in policies, but also changes in practice. So therefore, what is it that we generally do? It's mobilization of youth, it's mobilization of citizens at large, it's engagement with, say, indigenous people and their rights, which are at persons with disability, transgender people, those Dalits, those who are affected, who need, from whose collective strength probably the solutions would come. At the same time, engagement with networks, again, of youth, of on those working on education, on health, on SDGs, etc., bringing them together onto a common agenda, again, around, because inequalities in that sense prevail in every sector, in with every social group. This year, since we are also recording this at the eve of the global protest against inequality, apart from ongoing mobilization, we're also doing the People's Aspiration Survey, which I briefly mentioned earlier. We're also releasing an inequality anthem with one of the bigger fusion bands in India to address issues of inequality and the fact that change is possible. So therefore, it's citizens, it's policy work, but it's also above everything else, and also about making sure people's voices reach those who make decisions.
That's, you know, very, very inspiring. And it's, you know, great to see in terms of the art as well, artists being brought in. And we had that as well, music from Zambia, which has been really important as well. Maybe, Angela, you could just, you know, in terms of, you know, your own experience and for activists in India, you know, how hard is it to, you know, engage in that activism? And, you know, do you see a hope? You know, where do you get your hope and motivation from?
Possibility of success. That sure, it isn't easy, but change does happen, providing there is consistency of effort. And one draws energy from successes which one celebrates. Even small victories are important because they contribute to bigger victories. The belief of that a different, more equal, more fair world is possible. And even if it will take time for us to get there, it's possible, it's happened in other places, so why not here?
Great. Thank you, Angela, and best of luck with all your work and continuing great struggle and work. Jaya, in terms of, you know, yourself and, you know, what motivates you, you know, and those activists to, and where does your hope and motivation come from?
Good question. When I was sort of thinking about this, I realized that my sister, she suffers from a rare genetic condition, and sort of being brought up with her in there and looking at the problems she faced, in terms of the people, how they reacted to her, but also the healthcare, all these different inequalities, it sort of struck me. And then that's when I realized that inequality does exist, and we need to solve this. So I guess my motivation comes a lot from her, and then sort of using her to sort of kind of understand more about inequality, whether that's in the UK or globally. So yeah, that motivates me. And like Angela said, change. The fact that you can get change is really, really, it's a wonderful thought, and that kind of keeps me with hope even in such awful times. So yeah,
great. Thank you so much. And it is a wonderful thing to do, to be inspired by someone who's so close to you and so important to actually engage then in that wider society. Societal change, you know, and so I'm always really impressed by people who do that. You know, and of course it is, our own lives form us and shape us and, you know, drive us towards this. And I think that lovely idea that, you know, Angela spoke about and you've spoken about, change is possible. And that's really a really, really important message for people. Antonia, in terms of yourself, just to finish, you know, maybe you could outline, you know, what motivates you. Where do you see the hope and in terms of the future and you know, yeah, and what motivates you as an activist?
For me, it's the many young activists and who've joined the movement to fight against inequality or other social justice movements in the country, and to really just try to reimagine a future we've not lived. I like to say, like, growing up, I went to a school. My second grade was spent learning under a tree. And so when the government said, and it happens to be the experience of many people my age, because it happened at a time when government had stopped funding public education. So village people, schools in villages did not have classrooms. So you would take turns. So you go, one class would go in the morning and the next would go in the afternoon. If not, you would sit under a tree for a better part of the day just to get some education. And recently, a Kenyan member of parliament was on TV saying that because the minister had said if there are no classes to practice social distances, children should learn under a tree. And a lot of young activists and young people in Kenya spoke up and said, just because we learned under a tree, it doesn't mean those who came after us should go through the same struggle. And so it's that denouncing of marginalization, suffering inequality in access to services that young people who have witnessed it, even though they've never seen a fair and equal justice, to sort of say, we will not accept that this continues to younger people or the young who are behind us in the country. So I'm really, really inspired by the voices of many Kenyans who are speaking up and calling for change and for a fair, equal society, despite the fact that they've never experienced it, but daring to reimagine futures that are different from what they experienced in their younger time.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you to each of you, to Angela, Antonia, and Jaya, for joining me today on Reboot Republic. It's been really wonderful again to hear, you know, your voices, the voices of hope from around the world. And of course, importantly, to highlight the inequalities. And, you know, it's really, I think, as Tony, the producer, said very clearly from the outset, you know, when we were talking earlier, it is a global struggle. These issues face us all. And increasingly, as we see corporations, you know, globally, make such wealth, obscene wealth, that while we have such poverty, you know, this needs to change. And it's great to see people rising up and taking action. So thank you very much, all of you, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Great. And best of luck in all your actions and into next week. And to remind our listeners that you can check out fightinequality.org. The Fight Inequality Alliance is on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the hashtag is Better Than Davos, or hashtag Fight Inequality, and see what's going on in your country or globally, and tune in, and power to the people, and we can and we will change things. And we're going to finish again with the song we played the last day, which is the from Fight Inequality Zambia, who've released a song for the global protest called It's Not Fair, and the FIA Artists United have done that. Well worth listening to. Thank you, and talk to you soon.
Another K production. It's not fair. Yet it will call Evambi Valeli, Evambi Valela, Lane Salamuchado Chimoyo. It's not fair. Pampa, we won a Gangati Wachitila Dala, Mumesa Maven Vodila. She goes out, is a girl over all Seka. I did choose to be born in a society that does not prioritize the affairs of the poor, the weak, and the vulnerable.
Ichuma cha chalo, chuma cha vonse, ukwambira malonda pakana kuli bosi, ukwibile chalo, ukwibila abantu, ubuchushi tamwabo muchishi. Opportunity pele kuli bonse, bantu, bonse tukamilo buchinda mi, epela big man. Milando ah. Yeti tikale bambi baleri na bambi balera na nzala muchalo. Sitting on Kalevenangu, Wakutavena.
humanity to that woman. Stop the animosity towards a woman. Stop inequality and acknowledge that we are all equal. There's no difference. It don't matter where you come from, it don't matter where you grew up, it don't matter where you belong, the north or the south. Everybody have to benefit from the mining. The copper, the gold, not what them signing. Nifasire kira ke tululo, arwi kamera kikurikana ni musulo. Nifasire kira ke tululo, ranyanda. Babu pilomo, bababu banani, babamu habana. Nipate la dikolo, nimezi ya kunwa. Na ilimu, babamu bafumile, babamu banyanda. Teti twikale bambi baleri na bambi balera na nensala kucharo.
Cry, you see, every morning, every night, them a lie to me. When them no know how we live and survive, you see. Baka dwala wa maenda kuma milpag. Ise tika dwala ni minkwala za expired. Nifuno ziba mwati awi o Zambian. Chifu kwa benangu, we are strangers in our own land.
Seven zeshali zulako, alavije asogoleli yako. Power to the people, you and me are the people.
Inequality using people power
is not fair.
Never should we forget that the power of the people is stronger than the people in power.